This week on RSBNB Update, Fort 4 and 3 receives unwelcome guests in the form of new Slayer creatures. They also bring greater sonic wave and a wider discussion on magic, plus updates to Rack, Piercing Shot, Slice, and Punish that help our damage rotations. This is RSBNB Update, episode 930, recorded Thursday, April 13th, 2023, Slaying Magic. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week. It's Slayer Week, the Fort 4 and 3 series of content drops. Tanis, of course, you're here. Slayer's your favorite skill, one of your favorite skills. Is it your favorite? Full favorite?
Yeah. Well, Slayer and Construction, really, you know, but we got to go with Slayer right now because, you know, it's the flavor.
Exactly. And also Thaxi is here, as I promised from last week, with new abilities, ability reworks. Who would you expect, right?
Somebody called for balance changes. Excellent. I went hiking today. I've had a lovely day. I'm currently developing sunburns. But I'm excited to talk about it. They made some interesting changes, and I don't necessarily agree with the community on all of them, so we'll have a talk about it.
We'll be going into all that, of course. You know Thaxi from last year, our Elder God Wars coverage, the micro lessons, the whole shebang. Anytime it deals with combat and numbers, you're somebody we like to turn to. But of course, Tanis79 in-game, and myself at Shane12088. You can follow along in our show notes that you can find at update.show. We also have a Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord, and the Friends chat is Bits Bytes as well, if you want to hang out in there. And we're going to just start off with unwelcome guests, the quest, or mini quest perhaps, that we could say, that launched this piece of content this week. And the word that has come out is that they went back and forth internally numerous times about whether this was a quest or a mini quest, so on and so forth. And that's why there were questions around the reward on it, but nonetheless, it will be getting
there a reward.
Yeah, well, the guardhouse.
Oh, okay.
The guardhouse unlock is the big reward for this one. So, in this quest, fairly simple. We're not going to go too much into it. It's a question of talking with Overlord Civ, and with this, it's time to increase security at the fort. And you'll need to take care of some zombies, fortify the walls, again, which involves working with the raptor. I quite liked our interaction with the raptor here. I liked his no-nonsense path that he took forward to this, and that, you know, hey, just do this, or, you know, don't look at me the wrong way, or, you know, something's going to end up dead, and it might be you. Kind of thing.
They've done a very good job with keeping his continuity of character going just since they introduced him.
Yeah. I really like the raptor out of this, and I have to say, in this Fort 4 and 3 stuff so far, the storyline, I think interacting with him has probably been the highlight for me, though maybe that says a bit more about my personality than others, but we'll leave that for the listeners to talk about, of course. But the main aspect of Unwelcome Guests, the mini quest, is to build the guardhouse, which builds in the typical form of all the other fort buildings, requiring 14 teak frames and 6 stone wall fragments. And when this quest launched on launch day, the teak frames were selling for upwards of 100k plus each, believe it or not, because people just wanted to complete the guardhouse right away and not make their own teak frames. So if you're wanting to do this and save some money, probably best to either have your existing teak planks or teak logs even, and then make them yourself if you don't want to spend a boatload of money. And, of course, through going out this, you need to kill a handful of fetid zombies. Not too much to write home about on these. You just go kill them. Anybody who is of a sufficient combat level, I'd say mid-combat, will have no problem with these. Because one thing we're going to get into when we get into the Slayer side of this update is that the Slayer content here with the Unwelcome Guests update is for the entire breadth of the Slayer spectrum from level 1 all the way to 113, but more on that in a bit. But before we get into the actual Slayer creatures, I just want to do a quick recap on the guardhouse, because we talked about this last week, and I'm not going to go into full details again on this, but tier 1, it's a 1% increase in damage dealt on Slayer tasks, doubled versus undead, and a 2% increased chance to spawn elite mobs. Tier 2 gives you a slightly increased 5% Ushabti capture rate, and increases that elite mob spawn chance from 2% to 4%. And then Tier 3, the most interesting one, ultimate abilities have a 3% chance to execute non-boss Slayer targets, which does not apply to damage-boosting ultimates like Death Swiftness or Sunshine. There's also a 10% increased damage versus Slayer targets below 25% HP, and that elite mob spawn chance gets increased to 6%. And this has me thinking here, I realized in the rotation that I was using to test these Slayer creatures, you guys, I wasn't using ultimates. I was only using damage boosting ultimates. I wasn't using any that would have a chance at proccing this execute chance. Oops.
I mean, stuff like Deadshot's an interesting one because it hits multiple times, but your target probably dies. Or like Tsunami is probably the best example I can think of this, where Tsunami will just hit a ton of things if you're, you know, hitting a bunch of targets. So
yeah. I was using Malie, so
Meteor Strike.
That's what it would have been if I wanted to cue it, but no. Okay,
no.
I'm not up on my Malie ultimates, but in any case, there's also the Slayer challenges, which, you know, I think we do just need to mention as well again that this is going to be the main part of the update that everybody is looking for with this one, the chance to get your Slayer trophies, requiring each challenge requires a different Slayer level, 30, 50, and 90 respectively for the three of them. The first one is a 5% increase in Slayer points when completing Raptor tasks. The second one is a 10% increase of Slayer points from the Raptor task, and toggles the to change the default Raptor task length. I definitely want that one. And then challenge 3 brings that up to 15%, and bone fragments will drop from enemies during Raptor tasks that can be traded for extra Slayer experience. Now, I think I was going to mention this later, but I think I need to mention this now before we get into the Slayer creatures. People who repeatedly cancel their Slayer tasks are going to have a lower chance of getting the special tasks. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, Have they put that out publicly, or is that just from DMs we know? That we should probably explain what actually is going on here.
That's we heard that from Matazana. That's true.
We know it's true. It's just whether they've officially announced it. So the way that they described this working, to just clear this up immediately, every task you do consecutively that you do not skip adds 1 to the numerator of a fraction, which is your chance to get a Slayer challenge from the next time you get a task. The example used is 1 out of 100, so if you were looking for a task that was 1 out of 100, you do 2 tasks in a row, the next time you get a task, you'll have a 3 out of 100 chance to get that task. If you skip a task, including canceling it with points, that resets to 1 out of 100 again. So it is the number of consecutive tasks you do. So when I did Slayer, I got a ton of Slayer tasks. I did more of a Slayer challenge, 6 or 8 times, a remarkable number of times on my way to 120. Because I skipped almost no tasks. The only things on my block list were stuff that I straight up didn't want to do. And I didn't care about the XP rates, I just did whatever the task was. So, very interesting. Also worth noting that if you have Slayer VIP tickets, they do double your chances. So you get 2 out of 100 effectively, because it rolls it twice, and that second roll can roll the Slayer challenge. So having those does knock that effectively into being a 1 in 50, 2 in 50, 3 in 50, etc.
Yeah.
So that is worth noting.
I'd like to know what my number is behind the scenes, because when I was doing Slayer, I'd cancel my tasks willy-nilly if I got one I didn't like.
Well, it's crazy. When you don't like Slayer, you tend to cancel tasks, and then Slayer becomes a thing. Interesting.
Tadis, what do you think of this? Because I know you wanted the trophies.
Yeah, well, I think the main thing with this is Listen, it's never bad when they put in incentives to play the skill as intended. We have things that, yes, we can skip a task. You have your points to do that. You also, you know, you got the VIP tickets to be able to pick your task. You have the Master Slayer cape to be able to get a task.
And then you can curate with the preferred block list too.
Right. And so those things are all quality life updates. There's nothing wrong with them. But there's also nothing wrong with adding an incentive to play a skill as the skill was designed, right? Like, so I have absolutely no problem with this. Is it going to make it take a little bit longer? Probably. Maybe. I don't know. But that's Slayer, right? Like, this is part of the fun. Doing the different tasks and stuff like that. So I know when you're on your grind, you're looking for a particular, you know, four or five task that do the best XP. But if you are a fan of Slayer and you just like to do that, then you don't need to just do that the same four or five tasks.
You know what I think we need to do at some point? I think we need to build and this, I don't know if this is monthly bit territory or if this is a standalone segment territory or what. I think we need to build a list of block and prefer lists for various combat levels.
Are we talking about a Slayer task? And this needs to be, everybody needs to come with their own individual lists, because my list and Tannis's list, we both love Slayer, but our list would look nothing alike.
Yeah, no, they would be different. Yeah, guaranteed.
Well, that's a challenge for us on the production end. Anyways, let us know if that sounds like something you'd like to see from us, because I know when I was going for 120, I was constantly asking, I think, the both of you, what do you guys have on block and prefer? What do you guys have on block and prefer?
Quick reminder, when Shane says when he was going to 120, Shane actually means when he was lamping to 120. This man didn't do a Slayer task for years.
And I did lots of dummies.
Lots of dummies.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's
your favorite Slayer task, dummy.
No, if I had to pick one, it would be Abyssals.
I can't say it's a bad opinion,
but
anywho, this is a discussion for another day.
In a nutshell, if you canceled your last task when you roll for your next, it's 1 in 100. If you complete the next task and then when you roll for a challenge, it becomes 2 out of 100. Then if you complete the following task when you roll for a challenge, it's 3 out of 100. And if you cancel your next task when you roll for a challenge, it becomes 1 out of 100 again. And Matazana said the TLDR is that if you want Slayer specials, make sure you haven't hit them and keep doing tasks and don't cancel. And, you know, I think that's a perfect thing to bring in here with the Raptor, because when you start talking to the Raptor, you realize if you piss him off, he's going to look at you and, you know, deal your life points +1 in damage towards you. So... But
I do like what all the other NPCs kind of said about the Raptor. Like, I thought that was funny.
Yeah, it was.
Has anyone confirmed the Raptor's, like, not identity, but like anything?
No.
I thought the Raptor was like this gender neutral, just fairy creature of a. It's just a suit of armor. That's the only thing we know about it.
Yep.
I don't think we know.
And it could be undead, for all we know.
And that's just fine. We don't need to know. I'm very pleased with this.
It's kind of like the pyro on TF2.
Did they refer to the Raptor with a male pronoun at any point in the quest?
The wiki says gender male.
Interesting. I mean, the voice actor sounds male, but who knows? All right. Anyways, sorry. Me questioning my own life and choices.
All right, so we went through the guardhouse and we went through the quest and we had a word on the Raptor's challenges. Let's look at the actual tasks here right now. I don't think we need to talk about the fetid zombies that much, because those ones are the level ones.
They don't
ones
have mechs;
there.
They're not important.
They're just basically the trash mobs of the Slayer update. So not much to write home about with those ones. And this one is, once again, very clearly level 1 Slayer. Drops things like your iron and steel salvage.
Yep. No mechanics. You hit it until it dies. A few thousand life points, nothing to write home about.
And then we have our friends, the Bound Skeletons. Slightly more interesting on here, but this one takes it up to steel. So same sort of general category, level 1 Slayer required, but level 50 in order to get them as an assignment, interestingly enough.
Killed them, but yeah.
And in the same area there. Then we get to the two special ones for this update, the Risen Ghost and the Armored Phantom. Let's start with the Risen Ghost. These are some nice green ghosts. And with these passive effect that allows attacks to partially bypass damage mitigation. Also, it has an energy bar that, when filled, allows the ghost to heal with its attacks for a certain time period.
Mm-hmm.
These ones drop Rune and Mithril Salvage, Avanto and Ranner Seeds, or Calcite and Dracolith Stone Spirits. And I will say this, and I'm going to say this about the Armored Phantoms as well. I like what they did with the drop tables with these, and that they're not overloading us with supplies.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the
drop tables like here are ghostly. I like that they had a ghostly essence on there too, because that's going to be used with these. That's like they need to be dropping that a little more often than they have been. So
yep,
that's getting pricey.
Yeah, that is
right, because
really,
that initially
really
came from the Halloween event one year, right?
Well, yeah, the Phosmator did, but the essence that you use to charge it to like recover prayer, like if you were using it with the necklace, you can use the Ectoplasmator to get prayer XP, but you need to have it charged. Or not prayer XP, you get prayer points back like you're using a Bone Crusher with the Demon Horn necklace. You can do the same thing with Demon Horn necklace in this. And so, but you need to use the Ghostly Essence to do that. And so it is a consumable that drops rarely from ghosts. So dropping it in slightly larger trunks, good, thank you, appreciated. Also, the Risen Ghosts are Hex Hunter susceptible. That's we like that, I like that.
Nice.
And they dropped the new codex. That's, all the good
and
things.
Of course, marked very rare on that. We'll get to Greater Sonic Wave in a little bit. They also dropped the a 1 in 1,000 chance for cremation, the ability to burn bones on a bonfire or portable brazier.
Yeah. That's shared across all ghosts, I believe.
Okay, so that's just the general ghost drop table.
That is all just the tertiary section on here is entirely all ghost drops. Yep.
Okay.
And then the spirit gems. Nice rewards you for killing them quickly, and they do some damage to you. So you have to, it's effectively like Soul Split is more effective, and dealing more damage is more effective, which is nice.
Yeah, 30,000 life points, weak to ranged, and in general, weak against arrows.
Interesting. Again, I like arrows as a weakness. Yeah. They haven't. We found something that's arrows weakness for all. They've been sending a lot of arrow stuff out. Yeah. So. Good work,
Tanis. How did these go for you?
These went well. When it comes to the Slayer creature, what I really like about the especially the two special ones are that they are traditional Slayer creatures. They're like a monster with a quirk, right? They have one thing about them that is a little bit different. It's not overwhelming. It's not, it's challenging, but it's not too overwhelming. I used Soul Split and, good gear, Salve Amulet, stuff like that. But it was traditional Slayer, which I really appreciate. I found it kind of comparable to the way that they did some of the upper end monsters in the Sofenheim Slayer dungeon.
Right.
I agree with you when it comes to the drop tables. I think what they drop, it seems like most commonly, are the new things that were added here. So like bone fragments and stuff like that. It's like you said, it's not supplies. So
seeds.
Yeah, I think that's.
Yeah,
that's great.
The ghosts here drop one Avanto seed and one Ranner seed at a time.
Yeah. So that I like. The only thing that I have a problem with is, please, for the love of God, don't make us compete with each other anymore. I'm sick of it. I hate it.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, because this is with instancing on, and this is going to be on until May 10th.
Yeah, I know. But when, look, everyone has been guilty of it at one point or another. But please, try not to be a dick and slap your Kodak coil down there along with three or four or five other damn Kodak coils. It just sucks. Like, if I had my way, I think the solution is, okay, if you want your cannon, let it be in your own playroom dungeon. Get them out of here. I know that it's allegedly instanced, but every time I have went in there, I have yet to get in there where I could just do my own thing.
Yeah.
I'm always competing with people, and that sucks.
And they're going to be watching that, they said, into whether or not they need to adjust the number of people that are allowed into the crypt in an instance. They're going to be watching that.
Yeah. I think fewer people would be nice. To be totally honest, I think they would have no crowding issues at all with the current numbers of people if they just disallowed cannons. And I know that it's the hottest of takes, but like, while they have instances on, it's really easy to disable cannons in instances, as far as I'm aware.
And I want to say I agree with that. And I'm a person, when the Abyssal Creatures came out last year, I cannoned them. So I own one of those.
I mean, I own one too, but like, I am perfectly happy to go in and like learn to kill them without a cannon first before I try to have 12 of them aggroed on me at once, right? Like, I can still do this with like Karoming if I really want to like aggro a ton of them. But like, the cannon just seems unnecessary if you want to like maybe limit the number of them that are being killed in the big early rush or whatever. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to justify it, but if cannons are annoying and cannons are the problem in there, and I believe they are, right? They are the aggro machines. Intentionally, don't put the aggro machines in a place where you're trying to limit the number of things that people can aggro.
Yeah, that makes sense when you frame it that way. I also want to say that if you are on a Slayer task and you're killing the ghosts, these count for two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you didn't notice that.
I did not notice that. Are we ready for the Armored Phantoms, though?
Well, the Armored Phantoms count for five, and I think we can move on to those, because that's where, you know, I think that's where the mechanics come into play. It took a few runs for me, but I did figure these out. I played with respect to the combat triangle, what their weaknesses were and whatnot, and we'll get to whether or not magic is a better option for that in just a minute, but these have two.
I mean, Inquisitor staff, and then Animated,
And then these have two options here, or two mechanics. The Healing Orb, once per life, they'll spawn a spirit with 500k life points that will heal the Armored Phantom for up to 7,800 life points, or 15% of its total life points, every few seconds. And then the spirit will disappear once the Phantom is fully killed or when the spirit is stunned.
Yeah.
So basically, if spirit stuns spirit to prevent heal K, thanks, bye.
Yes, or else you're going to have to, you know, re-kill that Armored Phantom from whatever percentage.
I mean, if you can do 52,000 damage in, you know, 6 seconds, and a healing Phantom spawns in the middle of that 6 seconds, you don't care about that Phantom.
Yeah,
respect. Shy of that, it's done.
Yeah.
It's done.
And then the other special attack they have, they'll smash the ground, dealing 7,000 magic damage. This reduces your healing received by 40% for 30 seconds. I find this an interesting mechanic. I don't think they've done anything like that before.
Yeah.
And the damage is reduced if you have lower health. And with this has the appearance of Blood Icequake. And I went in there with Masterwork and my scythe, and it was a case to kill maybe a handful of them before I needed to go. And, you know, activate things like debilitate and whatnot. Granted, it wasn't a single-handed weapon and a defender, so I wasn't able to, you know, go for things like the resonance and all that. But, you know, that does have me thinking that you're going to be better off. You're going to be better off to use that Inquisitor staff and animate dead. Rather than
they are susceptible to ink for whatever reason, they should be susceptible to Maul. I'd think they have a crush weakness, but It's the staff, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But go ahead.
These are tough, right? Like yeah. These are tough Slayer creatures. They're not quite the mini boss style, but they do have that heal. Now, I don't love the reduction in the heal as a mechanic.
I don't think there's any way to clear it.
Yeah, not that I know of, and you know, I don't know. I was trying to think of what the tie into that would be, and I don't know. Maybe it's the ghost rotting your food, like it, you know, or something like that. But yeah. That being said, yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Shane. Even in my best setup, I couldn't kill more than a handful.
And you were using Lily.
No, I was using full Crypt Bloom.
Oh wow!
With the full Slayer Helm, Salve Amulet, all of that stuff, and then an Animate Dead.
Okay.
So, how quickly does that slam come out? Is it related to percent health?
No, as far as I can tell, it's random.
Yeah. So
and does it only hit in melee AoE? I mean, I guess they come up and try to.
Yeah, they'll swarm you.
Yeah, I was gonna say it doesn't matter.
Got
like,
it.
I didn't find any spots to stand there.
And
like
the thing that I saw with the people in here doing this is they set up the Aldak coil on the west side of the room, and then there's a little crack that will allow just one or two of the phantoms to peep through, and then that person can just finish them off with magic if they're standing there. So that seems to be the method that people were doing. With that is Aldak coil on the west, and there's a little crack by one of the pillars that is where they were standing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know, despite that, I actually enjoyed killing them. And you know, if I was doing Slayer, this is the kind of Slayer I would want to do. Just you know, one or two steps away from that kind of boss Slayer creature, based on where I'd been.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were too. They're a little too much to do it for fun and comfort, which is
exactly
why I like Slayer.
And to be fair, these ones are worth 5 kills on each task.
And to also be fair, their drop table, as much as we like how it is balanced, it is hot garbage.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Don't get me wrong, I do appreciate that it is hot garbage, but I cannot tell it wrong that it is. They do not drop a lot of money. This is not a terribly profitable task unless you pull that codex. So, like, it might be good XP, it might not be, they might be challenging, they might not be, whatever. But the drops you're getting from these are, you're going to probably be spending money on supplies for this. This is not a profitable Slayer task.
Whereas I think
which
with the...
interesting.
Because compared to the Abyssal Creatures, when those came out... The high-level ones were profitable mainly because of the flesh and whatnot, and the whip and everything.
Not even just because of the flesh. Like, literally, and not rares aside, they were dropped. Those things still drop, like, 20 to 50k a kill. These things look like they're dropping... Most of their drops appear to be in the, like, 5 to 6k range. There's a few things that are a little bit higher than that. There's obviously some salvage there, but, like... These are not dropping you tons of expensive things, and I think that that is for the best, to be totally honest.
We need to be 100% clear on that, is that I think we're going to see most updates this year be focused around tackling the inflation side of thing.
I'm fine with that. If they're fun to kill and there's that chance for greater Sonic Wave, the average price of these will be high because ability good. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. And with that, you know, after the initial hype goes down, you're going to have people doing these who like combat and who want the chance of getting that greater Sonic Wave codex. And I think that's fine for this because if you get assigned Zemmerigle's undead, well, you can either, you know, go do the Armored Phantoms, or you can just go head on over to the next room and camp the Risen Ghosts for an easier time.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, we didn't even mention Shane. We totally called it with Zamarigal.
We did. The big Z that we were talking about in the last quest, behind that door and whatnot, and ever so slightly creeping us a little bit more towards necromancy there.
Wait, hold on, hold on. Well, yeah, I mean, one, he is the necromancer guy for the entire game, let's be frank. If you're going to point at one person and say, hey, he's the necromancer dude, yeah, he's the necromancer dude. But follow up to that, you built a fort in a dukedom of Varrok. Now let's see who historically may have been a problem for the city of Varrok. Let's think about this. Oh, what's this? We have a problem just north of Varrok with a fort we built there? Oh, gee, let me think about who may have a gigantic underground hidden secret base in that area. Like, they hit it on the nose, they didn't have another option, and it's a good choice. Well done.
Of course, it's Emmerichel, but I don't know. Tanis, are these going to go on a block or a prefer list? What's happening with these for you?
The Armored Phantoms will probably be blocked from me because if I want that chance, I will get it from the Risen Ghost.
And that's one thing we don't know. We don't know if the Codex chance is the same on the Risen Ghost as it is on the Phantom.
It better not be.
It shouldn't be, that? But at the same time, I don't care how high it is, it's not high enough to really piss with these guys a whole lot. Like, they're a good Slayer creature. I think they should probably be higher as in level.
You know what I'm wondering?
You think you should have more than 52 million Slayer experience required to kill these?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
What I want to know is how much better you'd do if you had the Inquisitor staff with greater sonic wave, which I think is where we can go next. Because I don't think there's anything else we have left to say about the Armored Phantoms. We went through their core attacks, what they drop, the drop tables, and we're gonna put a big asterisk next to the thing that the instancing is gonna be watched over the coming days to see if it needs to be adjusted. And I think that scratches the itch for the creature's side of things. So
when it quiets down, if it becomes as quiet as the Abyssal Lords, and I have a feeling that it probably will, I expect that it will resolve itself. There will be empty worlds of these frequently. It's just that now they're dropping the hot new thing, and everybody's doing the Slayer test from the guy that assigns them a lot. When that all calms down, we should be okay.
Yeah. Tanis, anything else before we move on?
Well, I think this is a good update. I think the whole track of the fort has been so much better and funner than the puzzle box has been.
Right, because we were thinking that, you know, the fort was going to be for construction XP, but with it being unlocks tied to the construction skill, we're not even complaining about XP anymore like we were on that first week.
No, it really is become so much more, and it's obviously not done. So I thought the quest was fun, the monsters are good, and this is just good old Slayer.
And let's take a second too, just to like zoom out a little bit to think about the, like, this is round three of updates for a relatively small area, right? They're doing kind of, right at the start of the year, we're like, okay, last year you guys did good. You had a story contained within the sake of a year that was, like, relatively self-contained. You kind of sped through it at the end, but it's okay. I think it sounds like they took that feedback and said, okay, you want more frequent, smaller quests that have, you know, different stakes, but we're going to keep it into, like, they're effectively giving us, like, not a full expansion level content even, but they're giving us content batched as if it were, like,
yes,
here's your batch content from a Fort 4 and 3 air quotes mini expansion, and like we're getting it with honestly what seems to be a really nice story, or at least there's like progression, the world is changing in ways that are related to our influence on it, and every part of that seems just lovely, to be honest. Like, they seem to be doing a good job. I'm pleased with the direction this is going.
Yeah, and you know, on that whole batched content expansion thing, I think you could take everything before Necromancy drops and put that into an expansion, and then have your second big update of the year be Necromancy, with that and the stuff that follows it. Of course, Jagex is doing it month by month, because that's what the players of RuneScape expect, but if this were any other game, that's the kind of content cadence we'd be looking at. I think you guys can both agree with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I, like, Storyline-wise, I would be unsurprised if Necromancy was a blip in the continuity of this. I think this is all setting up for the release of Necromancy, if I had to guess. Yeah.
I feel like we're probably one or two updates.
We'll have the conclusion of this story with Necromancy after the fact of Necromancy coming out. Like, that's my expectation, and that's super cool to me. That they, like, they built this whole thing and they're building this story out to give context to this new skill. Like, yay, you're doing the RPG game thing, and I'm proud of you for it. Good job.
And when you compare the buildup of Necromancy compared to the buildup of Archaeology, you know, Archaeology, we just had Battle of the Monolith and the pre-release content for it. Whereas
they did do a lot of pre-release content, though. Let's be real clear. They did, like, they had all of those things where they had those tents out in the middle of that gravel pit, and they did the whole nine yards. Like,
right.
With hiding, like, secrets and keys and stories in these videos. Like, they did their diligence there, but it was in a different way, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to have sort of the same thing with that Necromancy when, you know, we start talking about it, which, you know, I think would probably be this month or next, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see on that. So
that's true. We'll see.
All right, so before we move on to what everybody wants to hear about, Greater Sonic Wave, I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters for this week because you guys are great. You guys let us do the fun podcast episodes. We had a wonderful one last week regarding the skill tier list, part two. Tanis, you were a bit under the weather for that one, but you got the readout on it at the end of the day. And, you know, just a big thank you to our Patreon supporters for allowing us to do what we do here. So this week, I'd like to thank Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., Pernasius, Ricky A., RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stub Eve, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin' Goat, Tim, Tom V., Zant, and Zazicon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and as I mentioned, we just put out our monthly bit for the month last week on Daily Skate Part 2. Jeez, that was last year. It was the Skill Tier List Part 2 that went out following our initial rating of it. And we talked about what makes a skill good, what makes a skill bad. And then there's also other tier lists. There's the Daily Skate Tier List, the PVM Boss Tier List, and so on and so forth. And with that, if you want access to any of those episodes or the entire back catalog, you can get those for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/RSBNB. And with that, you also get a mention in our show notes, and you'll be helping to fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. Our next tier, the $3 a month VIP tier, gets you a Discord channel, a special rank on Discord, mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and high-quality stereo versions of the show. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have our Insider tier. For $5 a month, we receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, in addition to everything else. So once again, a big, big thank you to our Patreon supporters for allowing us to do what we do here. Patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
All right. Greater Sonic Wave. There's two camps of belief on this one that we're going to go through. So we're going to start this the way we normally do, and I'm going to read through the tooltip, and then we'll break some of it down and how it interacts with a lot of the other changes made this week. So Greater Sonic Wave, of course, drops from our new Slayer creatures this week that we got. And with this, it's got a 5-second cooldown, does 40 to 160% ability damage, gives you an extra 6% accuracy on your next ability, and gains plus 100 ability damage for 4.2 seconds, and requires 75 magic. But there's something that's not mentioned in the tooltip that needs to be mentioned regarding this. And did you want to go here first, Taxi? The interactions with Chain, or where do you want to go first?
Sure. I mean, let's break down a little bit of, like, the weird interactions with this ability, because effectively, whenever it hits a target, you get that 100% ability damage for 4.2 seconds. Now, you'd say it's a single hit, single target ability, but when you use this with Greater Chain and Coroming, you can hit up to 7 targets with it, which will give you up to 700 ability damage. It's not listed on the tooltip, but it is something that does have an interaction. So effectively, 100, for the folks that like don't know, to put context on what this 100 ability damage kind of line is, for folks who have tier 90 plus gear, you tend to sit like 2200 to 2400 give or take ability damage. That's like the number we're looking at as our base. We'll say 2300 is like a nice average round, but people who are very high, like tier 95s and are running that kind of stuff, will have slightly higher. 100 extra for those people is like 4.5-5%. Like, it's nothing to write home about, and it basically, as long as you're using Sonic, if you use Sonic Wave every third ability, you would just get that extra 5% damage on every other hit that you deal, which is nice. That is a not insignificant buff. The thing that is crazy about this, though, is that if you think about that Kuroming interaction, you can hit the, if you use this ability right after Greater Chain, you can hit 7 targets with it, up to 7 targets if there are 7 targets within range, which gives you 700 ability damage, which puts you at 3,000, which is effectively a, like, give or take 30 to 35% damage buff for the next 2 abilities-ish. That is, every 10 seconds you can do that. So you effectively, like, 2 out of every 5 abilities could have that. Now, given your, you'd also have to use Chain and Sonic Wave out of your other 2 out of every 5 abilities. So, like, yeah, like, you know, give or take, but it is a very significant damage buff, especially if you need very brief burst window and you have multiple targets, right? So it's one of those niche things where if you have multiple targets and if you have all these unlocks, this could be really just like kind of ridiculously powerful, but it's oddly situational. And I kind of like that, because the other thing they did this week is that they put Sonic Wave and Concentrated Blast on the same cooldown timer. So if you use one, you cannot use the other until they're both back off cooldown. Which did do some things to, like, if you were using a staff for this, you, like, or staff, swapping between staff and wand, you can't use both of these powerful abilities now. But the thing that's, like, worth noting here in terms of, like, people are saying that that is a nerf to magic, and I've been kind of struggling to see exactly how that happens, to be totally honest, because the thing that, like, I think about with this is, what do you lose when you do one over the other? So, you've got Concentrated Blast on one hand, you've got Sonic Wave on the other hand. Concentrated Blast, obviously, like, ramping critical damage, critical chance increase. It's a channeled ability, so if you have, for some reason, a fractured staff in a, you know, thing, you could use that. It's a whole thing. For, like, our very high-end people, that is something to think about. But for somebody who's using, like, primarily wands and orbs, like, the Sonic Wave change doesn't matter to them. They're not going to be using the other one. For somebody using primarily staff, same kind of a deal, you've just gotten a straight buff.
Yeah.
If you're using fractured staff, they're meaning to nerf that, but that's, like, it's a whole own thing.
Yeah, and their official reasoning was is that magic right now has a lot of power at the baseline, but with that, it's reliant on dual wield spamming greater concentrated blast. And
right.
Their perception on this is that staves were falling way behind dual wield. And the part, and I asked David about this, our host who does high-end PVM, what he thought about this, and he said it comes down to a question of whether or not Sonic Wave will be used in a 4-tick rotation again, because the rotations it's built, his opinion is that they'll only see Rack used when stunning a target. And with that, that means there will be no Sonic Wave in the rotation, thus a decrease in DPS. And he sums it up as being at non-stunnable bosses like AOD, it's a small but meaningful nerf, but at bosses that are stunnable, it's a fairly meaningful nerf to the so-called meta, as it were, the people who do the 4-tick auto attack with the dual wheel staff swap.
And again, I'm not sure if he's like if like when if he was aware of the like extra ability damage on things, so, like he's undeniably right that it, like if you have a single target in front of you, no adds, no nothing.
Yeah.
Greater Concentrated Blast will unquestionably outperform. It just does ridiculously much damage in a fully like optimized setup. Same thing with like the Fractured Staff spec, right? Like those two kind of balance each other out in terms of like expensive and like important upgrades for their respective styles. Greater Sonic Wave, I think, again, if you've got multiple targets, it might be better, but you still like you're going to be using Concentrated Blast during the like the next 5 second cooldown while you're waiting for your chain to come back up in that case. If you have both available to you, Sonic Wave is not the one you want to use. But with that said, like,
yeah, and
changes, like, people are saying it's a nerf because there's some, like, again, maybe I just don't understand the rotation that he's talking about. Obviously, Rack is a big deal, too, but he's, like, throwing Rack details in here. Like, I'm sure this is related in some way that I'm just completely missing. But, like, to me, they increase the damage on Rack. So the other thing to think about is, let's talk briefly about the Rack change as well, just as part of this. So the Rack change, like, they went from having the average damage of Rack be 56% to now the average damage of Rack is 90% ability damage. And they somewhat lowered the, like, bonus if the target is bound or stunned, which may be what David's talking about in the middle of this. I'm not totally sure. But the thing to note there is that with Rack now dealing 90% ability damage, well, guess what? Regular Sonic Wave, not greater, regular Sonic Wave's average damage is, it's 91.2%. So the difference, like, if you're just using dual wield, you just use Rack now, and you lose, over the course of a minute, like, 5% weapon spell damage, you lose, like, 200 damage per minute. Like, that doesn't seem like that big of a nerf to me. Just, like, to be totally honest with you. And again, maybe there's some other stuff where, like, you're interacting it with other abilities. But as far as I can tell, like, Rack has a shorter cooldown and does the same damage as old Sonic Wave. Sonic Wave did have an accuracy buff attached to it, but that really wasn't that impactful with Endgame where you're going to be getting. Accuracy is kind of capped anyways. That's very much like a buff for people who are still in the mid-game.
And what I really see with the Sonic Wave changes and the Greater Sonic Wave is that this has given Stavs something. And, you know, we need to be 100% honest that nobody is going to 100% camp a Stav if they're doing high-level PVM, just like nobody is going to 100% camp dual wields if they're going to do that. They're going to do the four-tick auto-attacking swap. So even if a couple of percentage
points... I don't
want to
say nobody can. Like,
no,
it's certainly reasonable to camp one style.
It is.
Yeah, gamers are not going to do that.
Right.
But the majority of people who are killing the majority of bosses are probably not doing terribly sweaty multi-weapon switching things.
Exactly. And you know, that's the same category that I fall into. Whenever I would use magic, I would just sit on my wand and orb, if I'm being 100% honest. And with that, where I think this falls in is that I see Stavs in Greater Sonic Wave when paired with Chain, and, you know, if you want to throw Kuromi into it, I see that being the Slayer option, if I'm being 100% honest.
I think it's just generally multi-target, is what I'm going to say, is that they've added in a bunch of, like, buffs to multi-target scenarios with Staves, and they've kept Wand and Orb be relatively, like, you are going to hit a single target a lot and hard.
Yeah, again, and you know, that's a good summary for it, right? And
not what it was supposed to be, not what it was meant to be.
I don't remember back to the beginning of EOC with that. Do you?
I'm pretty sure that was the idea.
Okay. I'm going to believe you on that. And I think there's also a question that comes up in the community about this is, you know, are these game-breaking changes? Are these changes of a magnitude that are going to be as large as the Fractured Staff and Anime Dead changes? And the answer to that is no.
Well, I mean, I would make a strong argument that for stuff like the Zerk Arena, like, staves this week are just much better there. Just much, much better there than they were last week. Like, it's not close. Like, if you have Greater Chain and Greater Sonic Wave, you're hitting like a truck in there now. You just have 35% extra damage 40% of the time. Like, you can time your burst around that, right? Same thing with, like, people have been using, like, we have people in this game who are plenty good enough to time their burst windows and use their thresholds in that specific window. So, like, I don't know. Again, there are scenarios where this is a huge change, and overall it's super nice. And for the most time, like, is the average player going to really notice any changes from this other than a little extra damage if they're using staff? I don't think so.
Exactly. And I think that's why they can make that change. And, you know, it might be that this just comes down to, and, you know, we're covering our bases here. We're covering the Slayer side. We're covering the introductory PVM side. And now we're going to cover the high-end PVM side here with the four-tick auto-attacking rotations. It might just come into the equation that when you combine the changes made with Rack and the changes made with Sonic Wave this week, it's just not a one-to-one fit of how it was. And as such, you're going to see, you know, that DPS drop of a few percent, potentially.
Regardless of whatever else they've done, right, nerfs or buffs, they have buffed magic to some degree this week. That is the only thing that I can tell you for certain. They have taken two magic abilities and they have made them better.
Yeah.
And I believe that whatever that growth is, in all scenarios, it is, well, in every scenario I can think of, it is a better buff than, bigger buff than it is a nerf.
Yeah.
And, compare the two side by side.
And the way I personally like to look at this is that there's no boss in game that's going to become unkillable because of these changes.
Yeah, it's true too. That's true too.
And I mean, look at the game. Look at the game. We have all this power that we have seen since invention, and this was another thing that David mentioned in our discussions on this, there's been this continual climb of power creep increases since invention, through archaeology, through Elder God Wars, and so on and so forth. We have nowhere to direct this power.
Well,
except we've got bosses that have except at the highest of
now.
Yeah, except at the highest of enrages.
So, speaking of power creep, let's do a general overview too on the changes to our lovely 3-second cooldown friends with Rack, Piercing Shot, Slice, and Punish. So we've talked about Rack already, right? Rack and Piercing Shot both got the same buff treatment in terms of the average damage jumped from 56% to 90%. And all of these abilities now have a multiplier on them of some variety, right? Damage increased by percent. We did get a lovely message from Mod Sponge today, effectively just saying, yes, these are actually percent increases. They are not additive. They are multiplicative. So if you hit that average 90%, you'll get an extra 30% on top of that. So you end up at 117% damage to stunned targets with both of these abilities on average. Better, but, like, nothing to write home about. 117% isn't crazy. And there is, we've heard, a little more under the hood in terms of how this is all calculated, so those numbers are maybe a little odd, but they're also really hard to check, because you can't stun combat dummies and you can't get them to low health. So, we kind of have to fly by night and do some trust other people's math on this one. But generally speaking, like, there is a buff here. It is significant. It is especially bigger if you are not actively stunning your target when you're using these abilities. And the thing that I think is important to note about all of these is that they all did get a damage buff. We'll talk about the damage buff to the melee ones in a second, because they are in a slightly different kind of a category. But what the damage buff to these did is effectively bumped them up in priority for when you are designing your own rotation. And for the folks who use Revolution, it bumps them up in priority on your bar. Now, it's important to note that these are 3-second abilities, so if they have higher priority, everything that has a lower priority than them is pretty much out. Like, you need to have maybe one ability with lower priority than these in your rotation, and that's probably going to be good enough. So they have effectively just shortened the number of abilities that need to be in a fully successful Revolution rotation, because you can use only abilities and never have to resort to auto attacks while having fewer abilities on rotation. What this does is it frees up some of the lower damage abilities, lower than 90%, which is, frankly, a lot of basics, right? That is most of the style-specific stun abilities. That is most of the abilities like Sacrifice and Tuska's Wrath. And what this does is it allows you to, like, effectively just say, hey, I want to have a nice, successful, optimized rotation on either Revolution or Manual, but not include these abilities, not include these stuns or these chains or these like other things like that, these multi-target. We can put those abilities on separate buttons, and we can use them as we need. Or we can put them at the start of an ability bar for Revolution and say, hey, I really want this to be prioritized because this is something I need right now, and I'm willing to sacrifice some damage to get it. It effectively pulls those abilities out of the rotation, saying, hey, I need to use at least one of these so that I don't auto-attack. And now you say, I only need to use these when I want the secondary effect, when I want to hit multiple targets, when I want to stun something, when I want to Tuska's nuke something on a Slayer task. And I think that's an interesting change that we'll probably dive into more. We may do a... We've been talking about doing a quick couple-minute like update to the ability bar micro-lesson.
Which was everybody's favorite micro-lesson, by the way.
Yeah, we've definitely gotten a lot of good feedback on it. So it seems like it's a topic people like found useful. So maybe with these changes, we'll do a little bit of an update, because it does, like, this has simplified a little bit the creation of a Revolution bar for these styles, and it changes what Optima looks like.
Yeah, and you know, I want to say...
In a way that moves towards simplicity and gives you better options, so I like it as a whole.
When I started dipping my toes into the entire, you know, building an optimal rotation for Revolution of basics and whatnot, I found it really weird that I needed to include things like Stun and Sacrifice on there to have those autoed.
Right, because it did better damage than, right.
It did better damage than the ones that were available. So that's
yeah. These
good.
Used to be awful. If you had to use Wreck in a magic rotation, oof, I'm sorry. Right, like that's a you're a lower level and you haven't unlocked your Corruption Blast yet or something.
And what does this do for Wreck and Rune with Exsanguinate?
That's the thing. So I'm torn on that because I really liked being able to have Rack off my bar, and I suppose you still can. It doesn't actually change anything, because I liked not spending runes. That was the thing that made me happy, that I didn't have to spend a bunch of money on blood runes. Rack and Ruin is still, I believe, unchanged. So it is still a very powerful ability when you have it fully stacked and activated. This is interesting because Rack is something that actually should be used in your rotation. Now, before it was the, like, we put this last so that if we get here, it's better than an auto attack, but not by much. Now, it's actually, like, an ability that you probably want to be using in a Revolution rotation, most likely. Math as yet to come. But my early impression is yes. So Rack and Ruin will just fire automatically, which is nice, but also you'll spend more runes. So that may be a case where you need to have a separate rotation if you want to save those runes, and that's very reasonable. You just use what is effectively the old rotation.
All right, let's get on to Piercing Shot with ranged, because this one's really special now.
Yeah. So we've come with like the specific details with Rack. With Piercing Shot, the biggest change, in addition to like adding like 50 more than 50% to the damage it deals, is that it hits twice. Each hit deals half the total ability damage. They're balanced, and again, that 30% multiplicative extra damage to a target that is stunned or bound. The like biggest thing here is the hitting twice. They are continuing to lean into range as the combat style that likes to hit you a billion times, and each hit like just does more and more chip damage. So that is one extra every potentially 3 seconds, mind you. Every 3 seconds, this is a chance to activate poison. This is an extra chance to activate, which could be recursive on itself, remember, because the way the poison works, poison can proc poison. It's an extra chance to proc Becriminal Bolt effects. It's extra stacks for the Bow of the Last Guardian if you are a person who really micromanages your stacks and enjoys playing combat in that very active way. Ranged has become a style that very much benefits from hitting these extra things because of the extra chance to proc effects. And this is, leaning into that, this is a bigger buff than Rack, just straight up, because of that extra like hit. It is effectively an extra poison activation, extra things on top. So that instead of being 90%, what this actually turns into with that extra hit is like 97, 98 if you've got weapon poison on, plus like an extra 10 to 50 depending on what bolt type you're using, or both Last Guardian. I'm not going to try to do that math, I'm sorry. it is a significantly powerful ability now, and like that hitting twice will bump it up in priority over even some abilities that like might hit once. Like, again, I need to sit down and really like math out exactly what the expected value of this is in a relatively like end game kind of a setup, using end game ammunition and end game like damage values. But my expectation is that this may like we're putting this really high on a bar, because that hitting twice adds extra chip damage that makes the average value of this ability much higher.
Wonderful.
Yeah. In terms of Slice is an interesting ability. Moving on to the melee side of things, Slice was always good. And that's the thing that, like, you have to caveat. Almost all the 3-second abilities are kind of questionable, but Slice was the, like, hey, so you're in RuneScape, so we have a, like, 80% chance that you probably, if you're coming back to the game and you're, like, just throwing things on a bar, you may have played this game before and understood that when you last played it, melee was king. So we're going to give the melee 3-second ability way more power than the range and magic ones. Like it's not close. Like, they were hitting for, like, 56%. The Slice was hitting for, I think, 75. Like, it was a full, like, it was hitting a full, like, 20% ability damage more than the other two, which is not nothing when it's your only ability. So it was a really solid, like, it was the best damage style early game because of that, given you also had to be in melee range, so maybe that was compensatory. But Slice is just good, and they have kind of kept that, where it now hits for 95% average damage versus the other two hitting for 90. So it is not that much better than the others, but it is still somewhat better. And then the bonus damage to a Stunderbound target is 40% instead of 30% on Slice. Slice was used in rotation before because it was a relatively powerful ability. It outdid the average damage of, like, Tuska's Wrath off a Slayer task, which was typically, like, for me at least, the bar for this probably ought to belong on a bar if it can outdamage Tuska's. Tuska's tended to be towards the end of a lot of my, like, revolution bars when I was doing that. And this is just bumping it up, like, a whole other level. So, they also, the old damage on it was like 30 to 1, like it was a really
30 to 120.
Yes, it was a really wide range. Now it is 75 to 115, so they've narrowed that range. They've made it a much more reliable ability as well. Which, especially if you're going for that extra 40%, like, you're going to get more value out of that 40% more of the time. Again, overall, just like good buff, it stays slightly better than its fellows. Again, piercing shot, that hitting twice thing is really valuable, so that's probably actually better, but on the whole, Slice really powerful, especially for lower and mid tier kind of players as a like a basic ability. And then the last thing on here is Punish. Punish got less of a buff than the other two. The like base tooltip for this is 50 to 100% ability damage. Which averaged 75, just fine, respectable. Again, we already talked about above 70, we're looking at, like, usable range. Punish used to be, like, in that awful kind of a tier.
It was 18 to 94 previously.
Yes, which is that 56% average, just like the other two. Punish was the melee equivalent, without the extra stun damage. Now, the thing worth noting about Punish, the new change to it, they added a second line of, like, interesting to note is that if the target you use on is below 50% health, the damage is increased by 150%. They also multiplied the cooldown by, if I'm not wrong, either 5 or 8 times. So it has a much longer cooldown now, so you can't just spam this every 3 seconds on a target below 50% health, which is probably for the best. Again, we did learn that these percent increases are multiplicative, so what this effective tooltip is, when the target is above 50% health, it hits an average of 75% damage, 50 to 100. When the target is below 75% or below 50% health, it hits for 150% damage consistently. Right, average 125 to... wait, no, more than that. I did bad math. More than 150% on average. Like, it's... It ranges from 125 to 250%. So whatever the midpoint is on that, 187 or whatever.
That's pretty nice. That's pretty nice when you think about it.
Average 188% ability power. So it puts it in line with several other melee abilities that have a 25-second cooldown and 188% ability power. Except this one you only want to use when the target has low health. Again, melee has a lot of good options. This is one of them now, but it's situational. Like, you would never want to put this on a Revo bar, probably.
No.
24-second cooldown is long, and that like initial cooldown is rough, so like you'd want to put it at the end. You could make it work. It would be clunky. But
and with 24 seconds with that, you really do want to save it for when it's under that 50%, then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, yeah, that's the deal. As opposed to other things like Sever, which has a debuff attached to it in addition to being a 25-second and hitting 188% ability, right? So, either way, Punish... really solid damage now, really, really solid damage now, to be honest, for a basic ability especially. But that long cooldown, you probably want to have this as an active ability. You want to probably put this on one of your, like, threshold kind of keys if you're going to be using Revolution. I wouldn't activate it manually.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. And, you know, I think you're right. We should probably revisit Micro Lesson 1 at some point, just, you know, redo some of the action bars, taking these basics into account. And you know, I'm going to double down on what I said, in that I think that the story of this is that this is about focusing on the majority of the player base out there and just bringing nice buffs and enhancements to that, specifically staves in that multi-target scenario for that.
Yeah.
And you know, there might be a little bit taken off around the edges for the high tick or the high tier 4 tick auto attacking rotations, but overall,
yeah.
I think there's more buffs than nerfs this week.
I mean, on the topic of magic, just to like, not to beat a dead horse, but just to like take one more perspective on this, let's think about the types of players, right? You've got your like newer to PVM, newer to Slayer kind of people who are camping one style, they're one weapon, they don't have a fractured staff. They might have greater concentrated blast, right? But if your staves are cheaper than wand nor, because again, concentrated blast is powerful, for those people, they don't have greater chain. Let's say they don't have greater chain, because it's expensive, right? For those people, buying greater sonic wave, if they can afford it, if it drops often enough, which again, please, make the fun toys available to the player base. We don't know what the drop rate on this is yet, but please don't make it freaking 115,000 or something crazy. Soapbox aside, right? Like, for those players, if they have greater concentrated blast, like, or greater sonic wave, it's going to be just a straight up buff. Like, it's just a buff. It's especially you put sonic wave probably first or second on those people's bars, right? Right after corruption is my guess of how I would set that up. And then they just get extra damage, like almost 100% uptime on their other abilities, like. They just hit harder, especially if they're using like tier 70, tier 80 weapons, which again, I don't know how expensive this codex is going to be. That might not be reasonable.
Yeah. But and then if that's the case, we need to have another discussion on that once things settle in on that.
Yeah.
On that front.
Like for those people, straight up buff. For the folks who are like super end game, like they will know when it is safe to use that and they'll use it. And otherwise they have concentrated blast. And then the new rack to, like, take the extra place of that. Like, there's this weird, like, in-the-middle potential zone where people who don't want to do, or, like, are trying to do swaps but don't have certain weapons, like, maybe are in a rough position. But generally speaking, everyone like, benefits out of this. So.
Yeah. And, you know, my personal opinion on this is, and I think I've made this clear before, is that I would like a combat system where you can't change weapons in combat. And, you know, that's my personal opinion, but we know that would effectively break the PVM community in this game just because of how things...
People would leave. Not a lot of people, but the goal is to keep people here.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It would be healthier if the game had been maybe set up that way. Or if, like, you couldn't activate a special, like, there are a number of things that would make it maybe better for game health, but in terms of player engagement, I think we'd be, Yeah.
Yeah. Tannis, that's a hard question. And any questions before we move on this?
I don't have any questions. I just think that anything that cuts down on Switchscape is a good thing, because combat mm-hmm. shouldn't be inventory management.
And what this is doing is this is effectively enabling combat for the rest of us out there.
I know. How dare they?
So.
Fun new toy. Especially fun new toy if you have greater chain, but I don't know. I don't even want to know what the price on that boy is right now.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the rest of the patch notes then for this week. So they updated Undead Slayer categories game-wide, so monsters will more consistently appear in different undead categories for the purposes of Slayer, the most notable being creatures such as skeletal wyverns are now treated as undead and will work for skeleton and undead tasks. Banshees will work for ghosts and undead tasks, and Edamu will now work for ghost, zombie, and undead tasks. And here's a fun one. They removed an old restriction preventing the use of the salve amulet at the barrows, which will now also work in Rise of the Six.
I just want to say, I'm glad they have this patch note, because I forgot about the salve amulet until I read it. I was like, oh yeah, I need to take that out.
I mean, to be fair, a long time ago, it was pretty much, you know, a low to mid-level item that you would wear when doing undead monsters, and you would never think to use it at the barrows because it's a 15% damage and accuracy buff, but you weren't allowed to use it there. But I don't know if you would still use it there compared to, you know, something like,
you
if
still
you
use it against
undead. Oh god, yeah, no, 15 yeah. to 20% damage buff. Oh yeah, no. That's best in slot everywhere it works, Shane.
You're taking that over an you're taking that over an EOS.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, fair.
I mean, that would be a really great reward if they let us hang one up somewhere, but like... yes, I mean, and like, the argument I'll make here is, you know, Rise of the Six, the world record is literally 0 seconds, so...
It doesn't matter they're not, at this like, point.
Yeah, they're not going to break anything crazy by allowing people to use these things at barrows and rots. Like, barrows, I'm sorry... You would die to the second highest level.
Oh, that reminds me. I still need to make my way out there and get a Rise of the Six kill for Reaper Crew.
Yeah, you really need to get that rolling. I'm surprised you haven't done that yet.
Just a matter of motivation.
We could do it at any point. Just find a good pair of people. But
also, they added undead cluster tasks to Lanakea.
Mm-hmm.
And updated the colors of recent ability codices to differentiate themselves from other. That's good on the accessibility angle.
Yeah, so they added a little like red trim around some of the codex. Like you'll see, even on the like wiki pages we've been going to, some of the codexes now have red trim or green trim on the blue books to be like, hey, depending on what your ability it is. So good job.
Yep.
All the blue books are not all the same looking icon.
And lost Easter basket maps can now be picked up while a clue scroll is active in your inventory, which to me signals that they were using the same tech. That's a fun little thing from behind the scenes there. Wilderness Sword teleport options have been readjusted so that teleport to Edgeville will now always be the first option will activate when used from the action bar.
Where was it taking you before?
I believe you got a menu option rather than just teleport to Edgeville on that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good.
And, you know, I feel like this is one of those changes that you can make that, you know, people are going to be accepting of, but on the other hand, some people might have liked it how it was. And if I remember the discussion that happened around the time that the action bar launched, is that it's just not possible to allow people to choose which option appears first on the action bar. That needs to be hard-coded in for that. So
it'll have broken something for somebody and fix something for somebody else, but I will tell you, it will make rune span.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. Better. The Abyssal Rune Crafting.
I mean, even like getting to Edgeville for wilderness events, if you want to teleport from the NPCs in Edgeville, Like, it's a really nice change. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, that's good.
We'll definitely have a nation of our thoughts.
That's good when you put it in that perspective. And finally, Nastaroth's Constitution and Prayer Major Resets now require attack strength, ranged magic, defense, and summoning to be 10 or lower rather than 5 or lower to accommodate players who would need to perform a minor reset to qualify for a major reset. That's a very confusing patch note, and if anybody wants the full version of what happens on that, go back to our episode from a couple weeks ago when we ran through all this resets for peers and whatnot. So, okie dokie. And you know, we were content to end the episode there, but we wanted to highlight this Reddit thread, which is different for us, isn't it, Tanis?
Well, we have our own agenda behind it.
We do?
Go on, Shane.
I don't have an agenda behind this.
Well, yeah, we're highlighting the response, aren't we?
Yes, we're highlighting what Mod Sponge said in response to what was about 5 or so issues or bugs that were highlighted. And he came back with an entire list of things that they're looking at for this week, which is an excellent level of transparency, I have to say, on this.
Mm-hmm.
So we start off with things like a bug when using a new shop tea to capture souls of certain Slayer monsters, the incorrect soul would be stored. And this was an ordering issue that was brought into the game when all the undead were updated to use the new Slayer categories. It will be fixed. The insta-kill buff from the guardhouse works inconsistently on monsters that have multiple phases, and this is actually intended in that the guardhouse perk is an execute and not a true insta-kill, meaning that it still respects the combat system and creature phases. That's interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a good piece of clarification.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can use dragon metal amulets to kill rune dragons with random, like, corruption blast damage, but you couldn't, like, these ultimates wouldn't be able to one-shot them. They just send them to the next place.
Right.
It's cool.
Okay. Enabling of the specialist Slayer Simon is not prompted when getting a task from the raptor for the first time. This is something they're going to look into. Here's one for you, Tanis. Overcrowding at the crypt. They were hoping the numbers would come down slightly after the first day or two, and it's something that's going to be monitored. So fingers crossed on that one.
I hope so.
Raptor task variance is a bit strange, and he said this is partially in that we didn't want the raptor to be straight up overriding Lanakea, instead of offering you an option that you can access at any level and it'll still be fairly decent. Especially with the bone fragments edition it has. He's going to keep his eyes on it, but he's not convinced it's an issue at this point. Lack of a kill counter for more recent Slayer monsters is something that has been fixed and will be going into game shortly. An issue where cluster tasks do not force an elite monster spawn at the end of the task. He said he wasn't aware of this one, but he'll check if there's a bug in the system for it that's already been filed. Being on a raptor's task does not let you into Curadel's dungeon? Intentional? Question mark. And he says, my current understanding of this one is that, strictly speaking, the raptor isn't Curadel's superior, which is the reasoning given for other masters not working. There was also a progression concerns, as it would mean that you'd have access from level 10 into Curadel's dungeon for raptor's task, but then would be reblocked if you changed masters prior to unlocking Curadel. I think that explanation makes sense. Does that make sense to you guys?
It makes sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Armored phantoms do not count for the ghost tasks. Intentional? Question mark. He said, yes, intentional. There's a phantom task similar to ghost tasks in the game, and that ghosts aren't phantoms and phantoms aren't ghosts. However, it's been added to any Slayer. It's not added to any Slayer masters yet due to a lack of meaningful phantoms right now. All right.
I love Sponge, but if he's wanting to tell me that there is a phantom task in the game, when there isn't a phantom task in the game because there's not phantoms in the game, I have questions for Mod Sponge. Like, I get that it's in the game files, fine, but
but it's not in the game.
Phantoms are ghosts. your semantics are not welcome here. Carry on. Like, if a ghost test counts aberrant specters, it does. Anyways.
I see the path you're going down there. Checking building status in the fort doesn't show the guardhouse. This has been fixed. Tuska's Wrath does not work when killing Zamarigal's undead creatures during the special challenges. He says this is a long-standing bug that appears to have gone unnoticed till now, and they put a maintenance job in to resolve it. But it's a high-complexity-slash-low-impact issue.
Mm. Okay, so we just get regular old Tuskets for that. It is what it is.
Yeah. Unwelcome guests give 0 quest points. Fixed, potentially in Monday's build. Using a Slayer trophy at the guardhouse. Trophy spawn says nothing interesting happens. He's going to look into adding a message for that. Scenery decorations. Skeletons in the new Slayer crypt have Everlight examine messages. Oops. Fixed. Oh,
funny.
There was an issue that prevented entering the Edemu barrier on a zombie, ghost, undead Slayer. Cluster task. Fixed. Latest update map. Made map models disappear for many users. Ooh, that's not good. He says no idea what this is, and they don't think that this update touched that. But he's going to investigate with other teams. And there's incorrect blocking near the new crypt entrance where you can walk into a cemetery wall from the south side. Bug is on the backlog for this. And unrelated to this update, but there's something very wrong with the River Lum east of Drainer Manor. White lines appear on the mini-map, and you can walk on the water in multiple spots. Incorrect blocking. And then he said again, no idea. I'd assume this was an engine release that's causing this, but he'll chase it up. This is Mod Sponge doing the community's work here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, he clearly cares and puts in the time, so.
Because there's this huge list of things that, you know, are mentioned that people always wonder, you know, is Jagex looking out for these? And, you know, I realize that the devs have a lot on their plate, and I realize that it's not entirely feasible for them to come and say, this is a bug, because there are just so many of them. But I think every so often, doing these kind of look-ins on the situation like that, whether it's him that does it or somebody from CM that does it, I think that's a good thing to just say, hey, here's some of the bugs. You guys can ask us about these, and we'll see if we have them on record, and if not, we'll try and, you know, provide a brief explanation on that. I think that's really good.
So. Nope. I agree.
All right. Moving on. Achievements of the week. Tanis, you want to get us started?
All right. Well, let's start off with 82nd Airborne with 120 rune crafting on the 12th. And then we have Samurai Jack with 120 fire making on the 12th. We have Jade Gizmo with 120 wood cutting on the 11th. And we have Matt 258 with 120 wood cutting on the 11th. Look at those 120s.
Yeah, wood cutting's always a difficult one for me to go through. It's one of my most difficult 120s, I must say. Probably because, you know, wood cutting doesn't actually go there, and wood cutting's in desperate need of an update. But anyways, continuing on April 10th, we have Waffens with 99 magic and 99 ranged, Amos Reed with 120 ranged on the 9th, and Zilla got 120 farming on the 9th, and then Battle Slash X got 99 magic on the 8th.
On the 8th, again, we had Crazy Leg 722 with 120 Herblore. We had I Like Slayer with 120 Invention. On April 7th, we had Battle Slash again with 120 Herblore. A couple of them. Looks like that. And then April 6th, we had Nyard with 99 Construction and 99 Agility. Congratulations. Good job, everybody.
Well done. Well done. All right. Pick of the week time. Thaxi, you're up first.
Yeah. So something that came across my radar recently is a podcast called Midst, MIDST, that Critical Role actually is how it came across my like radar. Anyways, they acquired this podcast recently, and they're re-releasing it. It came out in two seasons from 2020 to 2022, and they're re-releasing episodes every week with some like remastered audio and like some extra visuals and stuff to make it like shiny. And they are working on producing a season 3 for it, so there will be more. But currently, the first 3 episodes are out up for free on YouTube. They're short; like the first episode is 15 minutes, and there's a 1-minute trailer. So if you haven't like if you have time, want to go interested in going, listen to it. But it is 3 anonymous voice actors who like do this incredible world building sci fantasy storytelling about these 3 main characters that are like in this world where crazy things are happening. And it is just so beautifully like narrated. I mean, obviously the quality of the voice acting is excellent, but it's even to the point of like, I'm willing to more than half of the words used in this like telling of this tale are descriptive words. They're adjectives. They're describing to you and like really painting a picture of the world around you, which is nothing like our own world, where darkness is a literal curtain that takes up physical space. And like there's like the moon, the opening 2 minutes of the first episode are people going crazy because there's been a big like sale of something and everybody's striking it rich, and then the moon falls on them. Like, it is,
you know, I think I'm going to look into this, cuz one of the things, and I'm on record of saying this, and this is why we had micro lessons in the past, is that, you know, I'm notoriously averse to long form content, and I think 15 minutes is okay on the side that I can stretch to. It looks like episodes 2 and 3 are also out, and those come in around 24 minutes, but that's probably okay. Still okay.
One per week. It seems very reasonable. So I've listened to the first couple episodes, and they are good. And that is all I have to say about it. So something to keep an eye on and look into.
All right. Wonderful. Tanis?
This was something that I think is really cool, but the PlayStation Store has added accessibility tags to the things in the store. So now if a game has a narrated main menu, it has a tag for that.
One of the most interesting ones that came up was that game does not play with rapid button presses.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, that's important for people with mobility issues to know. This is something that has always been difficult for people with any kind of challenge, because you never knew what you were going to get, and we all know how notoriously difficult the return policies are for games.
Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of times you were just stuck with it, and so this is just great, and thanks Sirion for bringing it to our attention.
Yeah, it's kind of a group pick of the week, and that Sirion brought it to your attention. You're using it here for pick because you're our accessibility person, but I feel like this is something that Microsoft needs to adopt. It's something that Apple needs to adopt, and you know, it's something that Steam needs to adopt, if I'm being 100% honest, because we all know how much garbage there is on Steam in this day and age, that it's hard to find a good game on Steam in the best of situations. Now, throw any kind of accessibility requirements on that, and it becomes even harder.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, I could imagine, if Microsoft didn't do this, I could imagine this directing somebody to purchase a PlayStation instead of an Xbox, if there was nothing that they needed on the Xbox that was exclusive to it.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's not very many Xbox exclusives. It's not really what they're known for. So.
Yeah, yeah. Directional audios, audio cue, alternatives, everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not only, like, it's not only controls. You can go through visual, audio, subtitles, gameplay, online communications, everything. You can see everything on it.
Yeah,
so
it's really, really, really nice. And like you said, Shane, I hope everyone else adopts this. PlayStation hasn't really been known in the past to have a lot of that stuff. So to see them do this, I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, because I think our last two accessibility picks of the week were Hogwarts Legacy and ESO.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when we talk about accessibility, if you're talking about it, there's a fairly good reason why we're highlighting that. And this is, in many ways, the culmination of both those two. And, you know, people might look at this and see it as it's not an issue for me. It might not be an issue for you right now. It could become an issue for you later. You could make a new friend that it is an issue for, and it starts to mean all the world for you. So that's why it's just so important to highlight these things when these big companies, especially Sony, do something right on this category.
Yeah, I mean, dude, someday we're all going to be in nursing homes. We're all going to be breaking out our PlayStations, our Xboxes, and we're going to have arthritis and bad eyes and ain't going to be able to hear nothing. And, you know, I mean, that's the future, right? I mean, that's just the way it's going
to
be.
Well, that's why RuneScape needs to invest in accessibility now.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
for sure.
Because it's going to be, I'd imagine they're already starting to see it, but, you know, assuming the game's around in 10 to 15 years, that's when the first round of RuneScape seniors are probably going to start to appear en masse. And of course, I know there's people already, you know, in north of 60 who play RS. I've encountered many of them before, but there's going to be way more of them in the future if RS definitely does manage to continue. So,
yeah, we didn't, I mean, my clan didn't get their name or their nickname.
The old folks home?
Yeah. RuneScape retirement community.
Yeah, well, you remember when Mod Warden came in, he said that, you know, being a little bit older himself, one of the things he said he needed was he needed UI scaling and he needed font rendering. And he was part of the reason we got those updates. So, but.
Yep.
All right. So, of course, with that, we move on to what we've been up to. Tanis, what have you been doing on RS?
Slayer. You know, I did the quest, and then the rest of the time I've been doing tasks to see if I could get one of the challenge tasks. I haven't gotten one yet, but
Now we know not to cancel.
Yeah, which I'm glad I never did, but yeah, still trying.
And I guess I should ask this: are you doing your combat with Slayer these days with Legacy, or using Revolution?
I am using Revolution because I wanted to see how the guardhouse perks would do, like the insta, well, not quote unquote insta kill, but you know,
the execute.
Yeah. Wanted to just kind of see how that would work. So I threw Tsunami on my bar. And
yeah, but you don't have that yet because you haven't got the challenges.
Right, but it's waiting. It's
okay.
There.
Fair, because AoE, Tsunami, amazing.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Thaxi?
I have... I mean, to be honest, I've gotten back into the game just in the last couple of days after my, like, really extended break, and I'm really enjoying, like, building the fort and getting back into some of the, like, updates and playing around with the new ability bars and things. Like, that's, you know... trying to get a lot of that stuff done before Necromancy comes out so that I'm ready for that release, and working on a couple of the, like, you know, remaining trim and comp requirements that I have been ignoring. So we're getting everything, like, re-wrapped up for all of that stuff, doing some farm runs occasionally, and just sitting building the fort, enjoying the new quests. It's been a grand old time.
Yeah. I know the immersion level. And you haven't done this one yet, but the immersion level for Murder on the Border was definitely something that we all really enjoyed when we discussed it on Quest Week. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say about that one when you get to it. But yeah, I heard the pain in your voice when you mentioned the farm runs.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're gonna focus on acquiring beans wherever possible.
Fair enough. As for me this week, I did my first Slayer task since I got 120, and that was the Armored Phantoms and Ghosts. I split it in between each, so thankfully I only had to, and this, I canceled one task before I knew what was happening there. But then after that, I got a really absurd task. It gave me, somebody with 120 Slayer, a task of the fetid zombies. So I was just, you know, out there in the wilderness slaughtering those. It didn't take too long.
Well, I mean, we did. They did say that the raptor is supposed to be, you know, he has a task list that scales from the very bottom to the very top. Unlike, which, like, to be honest, I kind of like. I like will still go back and do a Simona task occasionally just because I want something chill.
Right.
So, like, I'm excited to, like, get into using him.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I was thinking with this. Part of me is like, oh, if I didn't have 120 now, maybe the Raptor would be the Slayer master that I would use, because it's not, you know, huge wall-to-wall high-end Slayer creatures. There's still, of course, Abyssal Demons and whatnot on there that you can, you know, choose to kill however you want, but I like what I'm seeing on the Raptor list, and, you know, hey, I might, and this is interesting for me as not a Slayer person, I might actually step in more and do a few extra Slayer tasks just for fun. Though, we'll see how that goes, of course. But aside from that, Yak Track mining task, I got sidetracked on that when the update came out, and that mining task is just still sitting there with about 100 Animica mined. I don't know what it's at on skill and kill, but Yak Track has kind of fallen behind given the recent updates and whatnot, so I might have to double down on that. But nonetheless, old school update, I did my first herb farming run, and the money is immaculate there, and cruising towards 45 farming there.
Nice.
I felt like I just had to mention that on the side, and of course we won't let that take the entirety of the podcast away, but I still think the majority of my time was RS3 this week. And honestly, it's because of the Yak Track. I do have to admit that. It comes down to that old legacy thing that you cannot be logged into old school and RS3 at the same time on the same account. And that's the account that old school was. So it's going to be that. But I don't believe there's anything else. We'll be back next week, of course, for the next edition of RSB&B Update. If you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Casts, Spotify, and more. We also do the nibbles and whatnot and the video versions on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. And if you like what you see, give us a like and subscribe. Greatly helps the channel out. But, of course, thanks to the both of you for being here, as per usual. And we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.